We bring in the bench coach of the San Francisco Giants, Ron Wotus. Well, good morning.
Good morning, Marty.
Well, you heard my little wrap-up there, or my beginning of today in Madison Bumgarner. A couple of starts, well, not quite what he was before. What's up with him?
Well, you're going to get that through the course of the year. You know, I can't speak to his mechanics or if there's something that he's tinkering with. I know he works extremely hard. You always see him out on the field. You always see him in the video room. I'm not sure if there's something minor there that he's looking at to try to figure out. But no matter how good you are, and he's one of the best in the game, you're going to have days like that, and typically it boils down to pitch location. You know, maybe your location's a little bit off, and that's where a lot of times they go to the video room and they try to see mechanically if I'm doing something else, or, you know, my arm angles, am I on top of the ball? So items like that, I could not pinpoint it for you, but I know this. Madison will be ready today, and he'll make the adjustment necessary. It doesn't go on very long with him the way he works at it.
No, that is the truth. You see him out here. He's one of the first guys out here. But I will tell you this, and looking at starting pitching in the National League, and, you know, I always tell you, you want to know who's going to be in the playoffs? Just look at the starting pitching. And it's Chicago, Washington, and the Mets. The Mets are still a team, I think, of all these wild card teams, I think the Mets may be the most dangerous. Then the Giants, then it's Miami, then Los Angeles, then St. Louis, and those are the contenders.
Isn't that something?
And that's the way it works.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? Every year we do these shows, and you and I get to September, and I just read off the list. And those are the teams, the starting pitching teams.
No question. And, you know, as you said, the Mets, you know, with that dominant rotation they have, they can put together a long winning streak, and usually that's what happens when you have starters like this. I mean, you can reel off 5, 6, 7 in a row going through that rotation, but it's always been said, everybody knows, when we rebuilt the club this year, you know, Bobby Evans and his staff, we really wanted to bolster the pitching staff, which we did with Samardzija and Cueto, and that's the number one ingredient, you know. Even if you offensively you're challenged, you know, we won years past. I was at 2010 with the pitching that we had. We knew if we got into the playoffs and we could scratch out some runs, we had a good chance to win it. So that's the name of the game, no doubt about it.
I still think you're in that position. I really do. I tell you, with Samardzija, Moore, Cueto, and Bumgarner, if I'm an opposition team and you're in the playoffs and you got to face that, I don't care what the situation is, you got to deal with it.
Yeah, you can argue that we're in as good a shape as we've ever been with our starting staff getting into a playoff scenario. The guys that you just mentioned, you know, we're four deep, and that's what you want to be. I mean, not one of those guys is a day at the beach for the opposing team, and we got a couple left-handers mixed in there, which is really nice, especially for a team like the Dodgers where they're at right now. Yeah. Don't handle lefties as well, so there's no question that we have the horses on the mound that we need to get this done.
Yeah, just got to get there.
Yes.
Okay, just get there, and then we'll see what happens. But starting pitching, Ron Wotus and I just chatting about that before we get into some other subjects. Scherzer leads the league with 182 innings pitched. Bumgarner, 180. Cueto, 179. Samardzija, 166. Those are your top four in the National League in innings pitched. How do you like that?
Oh, I like it a lot. It does a lot of things. It makes your bullpen a lot better. You know, getting those innings out of your starters. You know, and typically, if they're going that deep in the game, you're winning games, and you're not going to the bullpen early, which wears you down. That's the number one thing you want to stay away from, whether you're in a playoff game or a regular season game. You know, that 24th guy on the staff, you don't want to have to put those guys in the fifth and sixth inning, and now you have to carry 4 to 5 innings with the bullpen. You know, the recipe for success is good starting pitching, a quality start. Then you go to the setup guy, you go to the closer, you shorten that game, you know, for the 7th, 8th, and 9th, or at least the 8th and 9th, opposed to getting in that bullpen early.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it. The lack of quality starts in the second half really has, I think it's been the problem, and now the team's starting to come around a little bit quality start-wise as we head into September. Well, the game the other night with Matt Moore not only was exciting for everyone who watched it, gave the team a tremendous psychological lift that I saw right away and saw everybody on Friday, But take us through. Come on, the last couple of innings with this, and you guys were obviously very concerned. Go ahead, because more with the pitch count was going up, and here we go.
Yeah, it wasn't an easy place for Boach to be. There's no question about that. You know, he started off the eighth inning, which, you know, when you get to the seventh inning and you've given up no hits, you say, okay, this is a real possibility, and you kind of expect it to happen. In the seventh inning, he got through it, but then the eighth, he walked the leadoff batter. And I know in my mind, you know, I'm saying, please, you know, you don't want him to have any lapses in command at that point. You know, if they're going to get a hit, let's get it done there. But you don't want to have him start walking people, which he did not, you know. And I'm sure for a pitcher, that's tough. You don't want to throw one right down the middle either. But you don't want to keep putting guys on base, because not only was he going for the no-hitter, but the game was such an important game for us. It's a two-game swing. So you're in uncomfortable territory as a manager watching his pitch count go up. And if he did start putting people on base, do I have to go to the bullpen and take him out with a no-hitter? But he got through it. He did a great job getting out of the eighth, and really thought he was going to get the no-hitter. Like everybody, when Span made the catch to lead off the ninth, you said, this is in the cards. He's going to do it. And unfortunately, it didn't work out that way.
Well, he threw a good pitch. He jammed Seager, and Gorky Hernandez would have had to have been Superman.
Exactly.
You know, there's no way in the world he, you know, that was a hit right off the bat. It was like Chavez against Yosmero Petit, you know, the same kind of hit.
Yeah, a clean hit. And that's the way you want it to happen. You don't want any controversy if it's going to happen. But it was exciting for everybody, as you said, you know, as the coaches, you know, you try to not be involved with that. You know, Roberto, I see him moving the outfield on a couple guys, and you want the players to utilize their instincts, but, you know, sometimes you have to do what you feel is right in that game. And our coaching staff and Roberto, he's been through it 1,000 times. You know, we've had our share of these situations here, just not no hitters, but obviously big games where you have to do what you think is right at that point in time. And, so it was a fun game for everybody. It was a fun game in the win, which was most important. You know, he didn't get the no-hitter, but to shut him out and put it to two games instead of four was huge for us.
What about the ninth inning, though? And here we remember Terry Collins in the World Series with Matt Harvey. You know, he said, let me go out there. And, of course, it cost them the game. They ended up losing the World Series. And I saw the discussion. I mean, but I could see Boach coming over and looking at him and more, trying to assure him. And you guys must have talked about it before Boach went to him. What was that like?
Well, Boach, you know, wanted to go to him, obviously, and make sure he's okay. He's off of Tommy John surgery, right? And his health is first and foremost. And, you know, Boach wanted to see how he was feeling and make sure he was comfortable with. That's a decision that you want to be together on, you know. So, obviously, Matty wanted to go back out there. He said he was fine, and he wanted to go back out to start the ninth, obviously. That would have been tough to take him out there. But then Eric got real uncomfortable for Boach from where I'm sitting. You know, he's up to 130 pitches, and he, you know, he's going to 3-2 count. Again, please don't walk a guy or two, because now you put Boach in a real difficult decision. His pitch count gets up 140, and then that's where he'd probably have to step in and for the benefit of Matt Moore and keep his health, you know, not risk anything and say, hey, you know, that's enough. But thank goodness we didn't have to get to that point.
Yeah, I said to myself, I put the question out on Twitter. It's always fun. You know, it's so funny. You know, I was home watching the game, and I very rarely keep score at home. You know my scorecard. I got my scorecard here, you know, the Dwayne Kuiper special scorecard. And I said, I'm going to keep score that night. And I kept score of the game, and I have it here. I was going to auction it off at the public house today for charity.
Oh, great. That's fantastic.
Someone will take it. But I put out on Twitter, because you like, this is a good part of Twitter, because when you're home alone, you're watching the game, but if you got 20,000 people to talk to, you're going back and forth. And I said, should they take him out or leave him in, go into the ninth inning? And 98% said, you know, leave him in.
Yeah.
And I even said, if he walks somebody, don't take him out. You
right.
know, you know, let the guy try to go for it.
Yeah, well, and look, everybody wants it to happen. You know, Boach does, the coaching staff, the players. He's only going to take him out if he has to, you know, to save himself and his health and to protect him. But he's going to get a lot of rope in that situation,
yeah.
a lot out a rope because it is a no-hitter, and it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for him. And he was throwing the ball good. You know, he was not laboring at all. So it was an exciting day for us all the way around. And I told Matt yesterday, he had a lot of tension, and rightfully so, when he came back here. I said, hey, thank goodness you didn't throw the no-hitter. Imagine how much attention you would have got. So he got a chuckle out of it.
Yeah, and I think almost the game getting a one-hitter for this franchise, for this fan base, at this time of year, with this second half going the way it was, I think it was as good as a no-hitter.
Yeah, listen, to me, it's just like a no-hitter,
yeah.
You know, because the guy, you know, jam shot, he bloops it in. What he did in the magnitude of the game, again, if, instead of being four out, we're two out. It was a must-win game. What he accomplished and to win that game the way we did, it made a statement against the Dodgers. So
yeah.
In my book, it was as good as a no-hitter
as
well.
Yeah, I agree. How about Cross playing that game where Nunez dove and Cross right there and he made the play?
Yeah. Well, it's Brandon Crawford.
That's your guy.
He's been pretty good for us for a long time. And there was a few nice plays in that game, and that was one of them. Thank goodness when Nunez dove, he didn't tip the ball or anything like that. But Craw was playing the hitter to pull, so he was in the right position.
Very good. Did you guys put any dots in the outfield out there in L.A.? Was any of that going on?
No, there wasn't, but we did have some conversation about it. You know, I was curious just how they're doing it and where they're marking the field with the lasers and all that. And, you know, one statistic that's thrown out there today that we didn't have years ago is, you know, the average distance that hitters hit the ball. Normally we do this as coaches and as players with your instincts. You know, guy has power, you're going to play deeper. Guy doesn't have power, you play in. But now as a tangible number, the average distance they hit a ball, and I just think that the Dodgers are utilizing that information to the depth as well of the outfielder, not just if you're playing towards the line. You know, the spray charts tell you whether you're going to play shade to right field or you're going to play straight up. But the depth of the outfield, and we've talked about it before, I've always felt the most difficult thing to nail is the depth of the outfield, because at field level, you know, you really don't see it very well. Now, as I said, the player and their instincts usually know the, you know, the proper depth to be, whether you're in no doubles or not. But they're trying to get an edge, and, you know, it worked against us there. We hit some balls right at them. We hit some balls deep. We weren't able to get extra base hits on. So, you know, I think it's working for them a little
bit.
Yeah,
it does. There's no question. You know, it's funny. I read an article, you know, I read these things at night, from 1953, right? And they were complaining about the dearth of 300 hitters. Where'd the 300 hitters go? You know, in 1939, they were, you know, that 60. They, you know, in 1953, they had 14 or something like that. And the answer was, they're shifting more. And it's tougher to get a hit. And this is 1953. So I always say baseball reflects America. Technology is such a big part of America. Now that shifting is so much more scientific, but the concept of shifting has been part of baseball forever.
Yeah, I know we talked about this, I think, a couple months ago, and you don't realize, you know, the Ted Williams shift and all the things that have gone on. So it's just more exaggerated today because of the technology and the information available, and it's the natural progression, really.
Yeah, it works. As I always say, baseball, just if you want to know what's going on in America, look at a baseball field, and that's what happens. Ron Woad is with us, the bench coach of the Giants. Interesting game last night in Detroit. And with the Angels and Detroit, Mike Everett was the home plate umpire. And I know there's this directive from Joe Torre, stop arguing about balls and strikes and all that kind of stuff. Well, Mike Everett tossed out four people last night, all on balls and strikes. Victor Martinez, who's, you know, a pretty mild-mannered guy, and put his arms behind his back and got into it with Everett, and he was yanked. Then they had Ausmus and the hitting coach Wally Joyner. They were thrown out. J.D. Martinez, he was thrown out. And J.D. Martinez talked about it after the game. And that pitches, you look, they looked a little low. What can I tell you? You know, we've seen them a million times. So J.D. Martinez was asked, why did you get thrown out? And he says, I have no idea. I said to the umpire, Mike, I think you're having a bad day. And Mike Everett said, what'd you say? And J.D. said, I think you're having a bad day. And he threw him out. And it's the old story with the umpire. The umpire, you know, talks to the player. Player says something to him. The umpire says, tell me that again. He tells him again, and he throws him out. The player says, why'd you throw me out? He says, because you told me twice. And I'm telling you, it came back to me last night, Mike Everett. You know, he heard him, and he said, what'd you say? And he said it again, and then he yanked him.
Right. Well, that's been going on for a long time, as you said. You know, umpires, they have to control the game, and you don't know what's gonna stick in their craw. But you wouldn't think if you ask him a question and he says politely, you're having a bad day, that he'd get thrown out. But that's the way umpires operate, right? They've baited guys over the years, as you said. What'd you say? And you give it to them again, and they're out of the game. So that's been going on for a long time. And obviously, you know, you go back to the technology conversation we're just having. You know, in today's game, four guys getting ejected. The information's right there for the players. If the pitches are strikes or balls, I mean, all I have to do is go right outside the dugout. They see the TV cameras. They have the computer down there to look at the location of the pitches. So the umpires are under more and more scrutiny today because there's an immediate knowledge if that pitch was a ball or a strike. And if a guy is having a bad day or it's an ultra big strike zone, the umpires are going to hear about it. Years ago, yeah, to be the benefit of the doubt. Was it a strike? Was it low? You really didn't know. Today, you know.
So you think there's more arguing today from the bench and players about balls and strikes? And you've been around the game, God, you go 35, 40 years already.
Yeah, there's no question. I think there is. I think, you know, when we were playing and you didn't have this technology and these boxes are putting up, you accepted it. You tried to know the umpire in his zone. Okay, this guy's a high ball umpire. This guy's a low ball umpire. You knew he's got a wide plate. And you would argue with that if you thought the zone was too big or too small for a pitcher. But today, it's tangible. And as I said, you can go see the location of the pitch. And when you're a hitter and you get rung up on a called third strike and you go downstairs and you look at that pitch and you see the catcher pull his glove back, that doesn't sit well with you. You know, it's a hard thing to let go and say, oh, well, it's just his strike zone. Yeah. So that's why there's more arguing about balls and strikes.
All right. We'll see where that's going to end up. Looking at some of the things we were asked last night on the show about Jarrett Parker. Someone said, hey, the guy took batting practice. You know, how does that work? He's supposed to be in the minor leagues. What's he doing here taking batting practice? Is that something that can happen? And I said, you know, maybe Pence would go on the DL or Sanchez would be optioned back, so they wanted Parker ready. How does that work?
Yeah, you know, I don't know the particular details of how they do that roster-wise. Obviously, he's not on our roster. He's just on a taxi squad because there may have been a DL situation to get him here, because, you know, that's the problem with the game. And we're fortunate for us, it's not a problem with the game, but a problem for teams when you do have an injury and you got to fly across country to get to the park. Yeah. Obviously, you can't get the player there in time. For us, you know, Sacramento's right up the road, so we had him here in position if need be, and he can work out with the team, but obviously is not eligible for the game. I don't know the roster ramifications, how Bobby Evans deals with that or gets that to happen, but I know this isn't the first time that something like this has happened.
I thought I saw in the paper they have to decide by 2 o'clock today. Maybe it's 24 hours or something. You
sure
could have the guy hang around.
That would make sense.
Yeah, before
yep
you have to make a move with
yeah
it. What do you think of Suarez last night? The game he pitched, and he had to stand in for Peavy back up in the big leagues, and what, double, single, double, home run, and that was the game last
yeah
night.
I thought he threw the ball well. I was real pleased the way he went out there. He started out with a walk, I think, there, and a little bit of shit, but he really settled in. And you know, if he could have just taken that one pitch back in the home run. Look, you're going to give up some hits. They got a pretty good lineup over there. But the home run, obviously, the three runs is what did him in. And being the time of year that it is and how important it is to keep the game close, yeah, you know, Boach went to the bullpen early. He wasn't going to take any chances. We've had some well-pitched games lately, so the guys in the pen were fresh. And, you know, maybe if it was 3 months ago, he would have stayed out there and pitched a little bit. Maybe he would have went 7 with 3 runs. You don't know. But at that point in time, we weren't going to take any chances. Overall, I thought he pitched well. If he could have just had that home run pitch back.
Yeah, Matt Kemp. Boy, Matt, we've seen Matt Kemp so many times. He's put on a little weight. He looks a little different, Matt Kemp. We had Mark Bowman on yesterday from MLB.com. I guess the general manager of Atlanta called him out.
Oh, he did?
Yeah,
huh?
He said, you put on 30 pounds. Mark said it on the air yesterday, and Kemp, you know, is he looks like Cecil Fielder. You know, he looks a little different.
He has put on the weight, but it helped him last night with the
home run.
He
certainly did.
Well,
he hit into the vegetable garden where he should be eating, probably. All right, Ron Wotus with us. He's the bench coach of the Giants. Well, Javi Lopez made a very nice play, a double play, that 1-6-3 double play, and he's turned that 3-6-1. He's gotten over there, and he's very good as a defender. And it brought a question to my mind. When the ball is hit back to the box or bunt back to the box, who makes the call for the pitcher to go to first or go to second or even third if there's a sacrifice going to third?
Right. Well, you know, the pitcher's got his back to the infield,
yeah.
So whether he goes to third or to second base, you always want your catcher calling the play. You know, a vocal catcher helping the pitcher out, direct him. So on a bad bunt, he could be yelling third, 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 or second, second, because the catcher sees everything. He sees where the runner is at. He sees the play very well. Now, having said that, any player on the field, whether it's a relay guy catching the ball and he has his trail guy helping him, telling him where to throw the ball, instinctively the pitchers know, and they should. You know, they're always told if you get a bad bunt, you know, you got to be anticipating going to the lead base. So instinctively, if the ball's bunted to them, they get to the ball quick. They know who's on first base. They know whether they have a shot at the lead base or not. And a guy like Javi that's been in the game forever, has been a tremendous fielder,
yeah.
Gets to the ball quick. He's expecting to get the lead runner. You know, a young guy that's just up that maybe doesn't have those type of skills or that assertiveness, he might be a little more cautious with it. But those are the things you want your pitchers to do. You want them to expect to get the lead runner, and you want them to use their instincts. Sometimes a catcher could be calling a play, but you know you got the guy because of
still
your instincts. You still go forward with it, yes.
Well, it made me think of this question, though, before we take a quick break here. If you could redo some of the spring training drills, and look, you're all over it from February 14th till April 1st. You're out there. I tell the fans, come out early. You want to watch the throw? We'll talk about Gorky's throw in a second. But what drills would you redo in September? Now, we've got 33 games to go. What would you redo now to refresh memories?
Well, you know, there's a lot of things that you can redo. Being the infield coach and the thing that I tried to do a couple years ago, and I'd like to do more of if possible, would be do cutoffs and relays with the infielders. And the reason why is they very seldom get an opportunity to throw the ball from the outfield to home or to that lead base. And, you know, it happens during the course of the games, but that's a skill you want to maintain. If you think about you know, how we prepare for the game. Everybody takes their BP every day. The infielders catch their ground balls, they throw to the base. Roberto has the outfielders throwing the bases. Even though we're not taking infield, they're doing all this type of stuff. But the relay throw is a throw they don't get to practice very much. And we've done it in years past a little bit here, but the problem with it is it's pretty taxing on your arm. The guy's got to crank up early in the day and you got to make that long throw. But that's one play, I think, that's very important to the success of the team, and it's not done often enough, and you lose that. Second basemen lose their arm a little bit, you know. They don't get to make that throw, and then they have to make a throw in a big spot. You know, first baseman has to go out in the grass in right field, make that throw in a big spot, and they haven't done it for a couple months. So that's one area infield-wise that I would like to do.
Boy, interesting. That's a huge play, and it made me think of all the throws to the plate. Not just from the outfielders, but from the infield.
How about
Belt thrown to the plate the other day? You know, he went home and Posey, I don't know what he was doing around the plate. He hit it a couple of times. But that's a throw. You better make it right. And you really don't practice that ever, do you?
No, you don't. And that's why when we take infield, you know, we take infield in the spring all the time, but we always work on the throw to the plate. You put him at that three depth, which Belt was at. He wasn't all the way in, but he was back behind the runner. So if the ball was hit slow, he was going to come home because it was a slow runner, so he can play a little bit deeper. He doesn't have to be up on the grass. And he made a great play. That's the way you work on it in the spring, as you're saying, but we don't get to work on those things during the season as much.
Yeah, that was Flowers, I think, coming in the catcher. I think that's who it was. And then Posey, like, hit the plate a couple of times. I don't know what he was doing.
Well, his foot, he wasn't sure if he was on it or not. You know, when Belt came to get the ball, maybe he didn't think he was going to come home. Yeah. And his foot, he was on the plate. He just wanted to make sure that he touched it. But he got it twice, actually.
Yes,
so that
he did.
Was good.
Yeah. Very good. All right, Ron Wotus with us. Dustin Pedroia did something yesterday. He almost tied a major league record. I want to talk to you about that because one fellow who owns the record, I think he's from Moosup, Connecticut, I think is where he's from. Is there a Moosup, Connecticut, I think?
Yes, there is. I'm not sure if it's pronounced Moosup or not, but I think I know. I've seen the town that you're talking about.
I'm from Brooklyn, so what do I know? All right, more coming up. Ron Wotus right here. Marty Lurie, we talk baseball right here on Sunday morning on KNBR 680, the sports leader.
Talking baseball with Marty Lurie on KNBR 680, the sports leader.
All right, nice to have you back here. Ron Wotus is with us. Well, Walt Dropo, Moosup, Connecticut, Johnny Kling. I'll tell you why these names are important. Catcher for the Cubs in 1908. And then we had Pinky Higgins, who was a manager of the Red Sox, a third baseman for the Red Sox. And they all did something that Pedroia almost did yesterday, and that is he had 11 hits in a row. I didn't even know this. And he went for his 12th hit and hit into a double play, but the major league record is 12 hits in a row. And Walt Dropo from your home state, right? Connecticut?
Yeah. No, I remember hearing Walt's name all the time growing up. Obviously, being from Connecticut, there weren't, you know, a whole lot of players that were from the state. It's a smaller state, but Walt Dropo, a big power hitter, is one of them. And that's interesting to me, being a power hitter like that, to reach base that many times. You'd think it'd be a Pete Rose type hitter, a line drive guy that sprays the ball around. But yeah, that's very, very difficult to do, obviously. That's a stat that you don't hear about very often. So it was interesting that Pedroia was at that point and it was brought up again. That's a tremendous accomplishment.
Yeah, 11 hits in a row. He didn't even know it. He was going to the bathroom and he heard on TV that someone said on TV. He didn't realize it because the people on the bench, this is like a no-hitter. They wouldn't talk to him.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, and he didn't know what was going on.
He
thought he was getting a cold shoulder, right, and nobody liked him, but they were trying to stay away from him. Very interesting. You know, it's funny you mention this because yesterday during the game, Steve Decker told me that he, in his career, and it wasn't in the major leagues, reached base 14 straight times, which was some sort of record at that point in time, via a walk or a hit or getting hit by a pitch. And he didn't realize it when it happened, and someone brought that up to his attention. So it's a stat you don't hear about, but very, very interesting, yeah.
Yeah, well, Pinky Higgins, Mike Higgins, he didn't like being called Pinky.
I don't blame him.
It was Mike Higgins, and he got on base 12 straight hits, but he had two walks in there, too.
Okay.
So that's 14 getting on base in a row. I think Dropo was just 12 for 12. And I think it was Walt Masterson ended that streak. I think he popped him up.
That does a lot for your average, I would imagine. 12 for 12. That'd raise it quite a bit, I would think.
Yeah, come on. Well, this time of year, you know, maybe 6 points or something like
that. Yeah, this time of year. But if he did it early, you know, he could have went being 200 hitter to 400
410.
Hitter. Yeah.
410. A couple of things that I like to talk about. One, the home runs. Home runs are all over the place. Now, I know the Giants don't hit a lot of home runs for a million reasons, but, well, do you see this? Do you see the ball just flying out of the park? I mean, there was some record set, I think, a couple of weeks ago, the most home runs in a day in Major League history.
Yeah. You know, it's not as obvious to me. I'm so locked into our games, and we've given up our share of home runs just like every team does. And as you said, you know, this ballpark, they don't fly out of here like crazy. But you go back east, you go some of these smaller parks in the warm weather, and the ball is just flying like crazy. Of course, we have our Arizona and our Colorado where we see that. And it doesn't stand out to me like it did years ago during the steroid era, obviously, yeah, because everybody, I mean, 60 home runs guys are hitting. But there have been, you know, the Orioles in particular, there are some guys on this list that are putting up pretty big home run numbers. There's no question about it. Yeah.
Yeah, swinging for the fences. I mean, you see a lot of strikeouts, a lot of home runs. And now the other thing is you see there's so many stat casts now of exit velocity,
right,
angle. I'll tell you this, Chris Bryant, where do you see this guy in Wrigley? I know you're ready for this. But he's got that swing. He's like a softball player. He's like a, you know, like one of these professional softball players, I don't care where you pitch the ball, if they got under it, boom.
Yeah.
They would hit, and I'm telling you, this guy has that loft swing. I don't know what his angle of home runs are, but I'm telling you, it's big.
Yeah, no, and he's playing in a park that when that wind's blowing on it regularly, you don't have to hit it. Of course, he can hit him out of any ballpark. He has that type of power. Definitely a low ball hitter. That's the path of his swing, and you have to make pitches on him. You know, he's quite a talent for a young hitter. You know, we saw him come up last year and what he accomplished, and to continue to do that and more so this year is pretty impressive.
Well, MVP probably Rizzo or Bryan. I think that seems to be the two leaders for that. Well, while you're in L.A., A.J. Ellis was traded for Carlos Ruiz, and of course, the big firestorm about that. My question to you is this: team chemistry, the leader, the 38-year-old guy in the clubhouse. Do you just yank him? Just, you know, I could see if you're going badly, but if you're going well, why isn't there something about the mojo of the team and the fun and the veteran who's not playing a lot but still is that leader in the clubhouse, so to speak?
Yeah, well, it's certainly something that everybody's aware of, the front office, the coaches, the players, and it's certainly something you don't want to mess with. Unless you really, you know, have a huge need to make the change. And I've heard a lot of conversation about this, and you can make the argument, okay, A.J. Ellis for Carlos Ruiz, who's a very good player as well and comes with a great reputation. Is it that much of an upgrade to risk the chemistry and the reaction to the ball club? So that's number one that comes to mind. Obviously, you know, the Dodgers front office thought that it was. The other thing was, you know, how it was handled. If you're going to make a move of that magnitude, you like to think maybe that they would alert A.J. Ellis or maybe even Clayton Kershaw or some of the players on the team that you knew were going to be not happy with this trade and let them know so they're not caught off guard. And maybe there'd be a different reaction, and it would be a little bit smoother with the trade, because you hear about the two guys wept together. And
you
talk
seen
about
that before?
No, I haven't heard about that.
I mean, I've never seen that ever in baseball. I've seen one person weep,
right,
but I've never had two people weep or wept.
Right. No, there's no question. So a lot made of it. Two character guys in Ellis and the catcher Ruiz. And then the third part of it is, you know, people will say, well, you know, you're taking one of their mainstay catchers that knows the pitching staff.
Yeah.
And you're bringing in a new guy who doesn't know the pitching staff. And he's not catching every day. So it's going to take him some time to get in rhythm with the pitchers, to know not just the starters but the relievers and the comfort zone of working together. So there are things to consider, but I think in the end, if the team feels they are improving their ball club, they're going to make that deal. But those are some of the things that you have to think about before you execute that trade.
Yeah, no, very well said. In fact, I don't know if you saw Jansen and Ruiz on Friday night. And, you know, Ruiz is petrified. I mean, the ball, you know, the one in the dirt, he sort of backhanded, and then the pitch above, I mean, looked like a college guy pitching to a high school guy.
Yeah. Well, there's going to be an adjustment period. There's no doubt about it. But these guys are professionals. Ruiz, very high character, quality catcher himself. Not in the prime of his career by no means. He's on the downslide himself. But you know, they'll get those things straightened out. And they have over a month of baseball left. So they felt that was a deal to make their club better.
Interesting move. One last thought for you. What's it going to take to get this team? I mean, 13-26 still, you know, those numbers are still out there. And, you know, you got the wild card lead right now, but here comes St. Louis. I'd say the Mets are still involved. I'm not so sure about Pittsburgh and Miami. But what's it going to take here to, you know, as you go into this September? You've been down the stretch before. San Diego lost 10 in a row and turned things around for the Giants, and you made that great run in 2010. What's it going to take to get this thing going right?
Well, you know, I think we've started to do that with the, you know, it starts with the starting pitching, as you like to say, you know, getting quality starts. And we have to have our guys on the field consistently.
Health.
Yeah, health is very, very important. You know, Hunter's back out of the lineup. And, you know, you take one guy out of the middle of the order, and it challenges you. It puts everybody else in a different situation. So, you know, Belt comes up with a stiff neck yesterday. We just won two in a row. So those things are very important. I think everybody, you know, on the club, this is the time of the year that every game, this is where you win the division. It's now. It's today, okay? And then after today, it's going to be tomorrow. It's not, there's plenty of games left. So I think that mentality is very, very important. It starts with the pitch and then just play good baseball.
All right. Very well said. All right. Have a good day today. We've got Bumgarner and Aaron Blair. In that one, and then of course it's Arizona coming in for two, and then off to Wrigley, Colorado, and then Arizona. So we'll see what the pitching looks like when you and I talk the next time.
All right, Marty. Look forward to being with you.
All right, that's the bench coach Ron Wotus of the Giants. A wonderful Sunday morning conversation. More coming up in the Sports Leader.